Welcome to the Be Connected podcast. Today we're talking with Carly Rice, the studio manager of Guymer Bailey in Brisbane. Guymer Bailey is known as one of those lovely people in the industry with some fantastic culture, great things like they have a GBA art show and also a 9-day fortnight, as well as Carly has developed a CPD program on transgender. Let's jump on in and have a fantastic chat with Carly a bit about her background and the great things that she's been developing. Brilliant, Carly. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Be Connected podcast.
Hello.
So, Carly, tell us a little bit about your role. You work for Guymer Bailey and you're the studio manager.
Yeah, studio manager for the Brisbane office and also an associate in there. I still do a little bit of project work and generally just help with all things resourcing and HR and
So Carly, tell us a little bit about your background, because you obviously are an architect, architectural technician by background. You're also married to an architect as well. Take us through the career history first that sort of brought you where we are today.
Yeah, so I'm an architectural technician, so I never went to uni or anything like that and never got that far. But I started out just studying at TAFE and worked my way pretty much from second year through that course. So I started in the industry very young. I was only 19 when I got my first job in the industry.
Can I ask what decade that might have been?
There was an in there at that point.
I think we were all, oh no, hang on, no, mine was the 2000s, all right, so there was still a 90s.
It was the 90s. And, it was an exciting time and meeting lots of amazing people who now, when you think about who those people are, they're quite high in industry and well-known. So you realise how old you are when you know lots of influential
people. Carly, it's probably more of a case that, you know, when people are starting out in their careers, you know, that you don't know what your future is going to hold. You don't know where you're going to end up. But I think that's one of the things, is that at the end of the day, no matter a leader, and you go through this progression, we can have that discussion as well, but everybody is a person at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Has a journey.
Right.
You probably met them an earlier part when you guys, you know, like most of us in our 20s and starting our first jobs, having a heck of a lot of fun and enjoying ourselves. And then as time goes on, we become more responsible for the people who are having that fun and getting the work in the door and making all the business runs really well.
Yeah, I was at a girlfriend's daughter's 30th a few weeks ago and met someone there who I've met before but never really knew what he did for a job, and I found out what he did and I was like, wow, okay, so our paths are going to cross soon. And, yeah, you just start. It's just because we're old. But, yeah, that's good. So, yeah, and at 22, got the travel bug and I went overseas on a six-week tour, came back, saved up enough then and ended up living in London for 2 years, which is where I met my husband. We were an office romance in London. He's Irish, so we then moved to Dublin and I ended up living and working in Dublin for 3.5 years. So this 22-year-old that got a bit of a travel bug didn't come home until she was about 27, 28. So
that sounds like a life lived, may I just say. I think that's if I was to give advice now back in my 20s, I'd be thinking, yep, definitely go over travel before you, you know, buy the house, do the kids, all of those types of things.
And being that person in a place where you don't know anybody and learning about different cultures and just traveling and seeing how different people live and living that life as well. Yeah, I had a very blessed beginning in my career, and then we moved back here and bought a house and started having children. So I
think that's one of the things that's really interesting, right? Like, I often get asked advice from people, should they go and do an architectural degree or should they go to TAFE? And funnily enough, having been in the industry for years, I probably would say I did economics as a degree, right? And there's this study of where you look at the amount of education you get for this is the return that you get out of being able to earn income. And I would probably say that the best return is obviously doing the technical degree, because we love our graduates, but often we have to then teach them how building goes together because, you know, buildings need to stand up and need to be built and all of those sorts of things. What do you personally think? You've obviously mentored people and seen people grow. I mean, we're not saying we want a whole world of non-architects, but I think for somebody who's looking at architecture, it's a great way in. I've known lots of people who do that. And then if they want to go off and do the actual degree later, they do that and then get that bigger thinking.
Yeah, I've been getting involved with QUT a lot more recently and talking to their grads and people looking for internships, and it's really flagging how much they don't learn in the project, in the degree. And some of our more recent grads in the office have started writing like a program for new grads to come on board and start, and it's what they didn't teach you at uni is the name of the list. And
what are some of the things that are on that list?
Oh, all sorts. Yeah, there's a lot, like, you know, from taking minutes to, you know big parts of the Clarkitecture, as we call it.
Yeah.
And it also depends on the person. And there's just not there's so many degree courses and things out there now, but there's not as much work, you know, for that number and that volume of students to come through. So where a while ago you would have been able to work your way through a degree and get all that practical experience, and you had mentors on tap and experienced people to give you advice, it's just not as easy for them now. So yeah.
And I think that is really hard. Like, we recently just put out a poll the other week, is it hard to get a job, you know, in your start of your career, at the end of your career? And I think, or at all stages, and obviously majority at the end or at the start. And I think that is the most difficult thing. I think, you know, the industry is about to go through another lot of change as well, as we see the effects of AI come into effect more. Obviously, you know, architecture has been affected more probably, you know. I know I was talking to a consultant, it's like, you know, 10% of the fee has always gone to the consultants, then you've got the project managers, now you've got like 7 or 8 different consultants in there. So that percentage has gone down, and obviously, you know, that's got smaller and smaller for the architecture fraternity as well. And, you know, I'm obviously been working with architects for years. Design element is always the element that I feel is most undervalued generally within the process. But, you know, if you don't do the design fact right, then you'll be paying for it a lot more later on. So it is so important that we're teaching those people. All right, well, let's have a little bit of a chat. I mean, Bailey, so tell us a little bit about the values and some great things that you guys do, because obviously I work with a lot of different people, a lot of different firms, and I must say, in having met Guymer Bailey, both in Melbourne and in Brisbane, you guys have an incredible value set, I feel, and are one of those really lovely places to work, and that's what
I think in October I'll have been with GBA for 10 years, and I still regularly get reminded of how lucky I am to be there. And, you know, there's a saying about the fish rots from the head down, and it really does start from the top. So the attitude from the two directors is really good, and they're very caring and supportive of their staff and know that they're their greatest asset. So it's really just working with them all. And I think some of my proudest things have come when I've reflected back to other times in my life. Like, I can remember one point I was working part-time. I had a toddler and must have been a 9-month-old baby at that point in time, working part-time, and I'd put in for some annual leave, and whoever I was reporting to at the time, this was not in an architectural office, I'll just say, but the response was, why should you get those holidays? You don't deserve them. You don't work full-time. And so little comments like that I'd had earlier in my career, I'm just so proud that that's not the case anymore, and especially not at GBA. And the other day I was showing my husband some posts on just our general Brisbane channel, and it was all these dads in one afternoon. 3 dads had, one was doing school pickup, one was going to a parent-teacher interview, and one was at a school sports event or something. And I was just like, you know, this never happened. You know, you were lucky if the mums got the time off to do that. And I think if we can just treat staff like people and treat them as adults, and it all just comes down to communication after that. So if they communicate and we communicate our expectations, then everyone knows where they sit.
And that's it. I mean, I always love when people go, oh, how do you have a tough conversation? I'm like, just be open and honest and treat the person like human being. I mean, you and I have both been in positions we've had to let people go, and there's so many occasions that I hear the horrible ways that those things are handled versus treating somebody like a human being and having an honest conversation with them, whatever the circumstances are. Whether you're having a good, a positive, or a difficult conversation, actually just it's a person at the end of the day. As I said, you know, a leader is still a human being, you know, who goes home to the kids or has this or that or has things going on in their lives as well. So we've just got to remember that. And I think that's it. At the end of the day, it's in the benefit of a business too, because if you actually understand that your people are humans at the end of the day and things happen and they have the needs in their lives, you will actually get the best out of them.
Yeah.
Right? That swings and roundabouts. And if it doesn't work, then that person's not the right fit. I love this. A friend of mine the other day posted, she was like, you know, it's very simple whether people should be in your team or not. Would you rehire them again? And I was like, that is just the simplest question ever. If you can simply say, would I rehire this person? Then that's the person that you'd be working with. If you're they're not, you wouldn't rehire them, then they're probably not the right fit. And so you've given your take. And I think you guys do that. I noticed when I walked into your office the first time in Brisbane, obviously the rainbow flag was everywhere.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
I can't remember if it was a week or something that I walked
into.
So that probably leads me a little bit too. You've obviously done a lot within this space as well, within the Pride space, and that's where you and I have connected as well and on neurodiversity. So can we talk a little bit about some of the other programs and things that GBA has been really supporting people on, probably a more diversity inclusion point of view?
Yeah, so, you know, there's the flexibility in the workplace and just that communication piece, but protecting mental health and just being diverse in all areas. It's not just about women's lib anymore. It's about all the LGBT needs. It's about multicultural needs and just treating people like people. Mm. So, and it's okay. Like if somebody has different needs or whatever, that's okay. We just need to learn about it and work around it. So, I've raised two children with neurodiverse needs in the education space, and I, through that experience, I've always wanted to educate others around what those needs might be. Like, I can remember being very judgy about people's spelling, and lo and behold, I ended up with a child that's severely dyslexic, and just learning to understand their life. And then if you throw in ADHD on top of that or autism, it's just learning to understand and work with those people. And again, they're just people. So, and we're all different.
Oh, and we all have different strengths, and, you know, we call it the spicy personalities, where it's strengths in different areas. And then I was, look, I'm obviously neurodiverse myself. So I get that, and I hid it for many years. Don't worry. I even did a dyslexic thing this morning. I was like, sorry, guys, pulling it out on that one. But, you know, these things come up. So you guys also put in a fantastic 9-day fortnight, and that was something you and I obviously had a chat. I was working with a client the other day. We were looking to do it in some different ways, and we had a bit of a chat about some things that you guys did and you put in. So let's talk a little bit about that. What was the driver for it, and then some of the things that you considered, and then some of the things that were foreseen and unforeseen?
Yeah, so I think it's 2 years we've been doing it for now. So we had done a poll in the office, and a few of us as seniors had thought it was sounded like a really good idea, but without really knowing what it actually meant until you start digging into it. But the more I dug into it, the more I wanted it for myself. And we've really seen, especially for the seniors, around burnout and just having that space where you don't have to run around like an idiot in your lunch break to try and get to the dentist or whatever. You can now just look in the calendar and go, well, that'll be my Friday off. And yeah. We've got the whole office closed. So it also...
options with that. So yeah. What was the reason that you guys went with we're all in or we're all out? What were some of the considerations?
One of the considerations was like through COVID and stuff, you know, you were always trying to work out who was in on what day, and that way it was just everyone was the same. And it caused some issues as well. Like some people might have had childcare booked on a Friday, for example, or, you know, it wasn't a date that they wanted. So it didn't work for everyone, but it just meant that for the seniors, it's treated like a Sunday. And from a HR perspective, that's what we have to treat it as, because the office is closed. So there's an there's a rule around that, you know, you don't message people on that day, you don't send emails. So it's not drawing people into the sphere the same as it would if everything was ticking along and running. You know, you can often be having people that work part-time and get drawn into the office or into meetings or things on their days off. And it just minimized that. And I'm not going to say, like, there are still people that still do have to work sometimes.
But essentially it's meant that instead of there being a bunch of people and then somebody gets a message and it causes them anxiety, which it will, you're out and about doing your shopping, you're at the doctor and you go this, you're like, oh shit, I need to get my computer, what's this? That doesn't stop. So obviously I'm sure on the other side there was considerations around, okay, well, we're going to actually close the office. How are clients going to deal with this? How are projects? And how's that gone?
Yeah, we had one MC at the time, didn't support it, and you know, it was a big building site. So we just had a few guys that were on a roster that would just be available to answer phone calls or go out there onto site if it was necessary. We still get the odd time where we'll be requested for meetings. And because we're a flexible workplace, we just say you just make up the hours across that. Our pay cycle is a fortnight. So long as they can make their timesheets add up somehow, that's how it works. So it allows a lot more flexibility in that mindset.
Well, you and I had that conversation. I rang you the other day when I was doing it with a client, because there's multiple different ways of skinning the cash, and we obviously spoke about that other people had asked the same thing, and it's sometimes the unforeseen challenges that you see. We ended up actually writing a whole guide on this and how to actually go about it. So through Bill PX, our HR company, and, you know, we've looked at all the pros and the cons and gone through all the considerations from payroll and timesheet perspective. Yeah. Our client, we offered, they pay on a monthly point of view, and we said, okay, they had the intention they wanted. It was an agreement between them. And then it was already sort of a done deal. And then we provided them with advice, and we actually ended up going with a monthly sort of wellbeing approach, because we also want to be B Corp orientated. And so the same thing as you said, you know, the 9-day fortnight or having this as a wellbeing day and proportioning it then to what it is. It'll be interesting over time to see what the challenges are. You always see what those are as you go through. So now you've done that for 2 years, and I see other firms have done the same thing. I think it's always great to do a trial first between doing that. Then all that, you can always think you think of everything, but then actually being able to see what didn't we think of. I also love, and you and I obviously share the same values in that essentially just ask people. Don't presume because you're the leadership team we're going to do something.
No, and it was very collaborative in that approach. Like it was, we got a lot of careful advice from a HR and also from a HR lawyer for a couple of things too. And, you know, with the different awards that we're dealing with and different things. So we did do quite a bit of consultation, and one of our less senior staff conducted a survey so that people could give their opinion, and they did it at 1, 3, and 6 months so that we could, you know, look at all the issues that people came up with.
And yeah, it was around some of the administrative elements as well and figure out. Well, that's great. So I think it's a really lovely value add. I think, you know, we know in the industry it's not necessarily a 9-to-5 job. You just can't clock off, you know. Building sites open early, things happen, projects have deadlines. As much as you can resource and plan to the nth degree, it's just not a linear industry. No. Things constantly are changing. It's dynamic. Things are happening all the time. So to take that approach, and I think particularly in this industry and for architects as well, but, you know, even those in building, it is, it's hard. I mean, yeah. A lot of the construction and the construction award actually has a lot of RDOs and speculated already. So these things are already considered into there. All right. So let's talk now a little bit about some programs that you've personally gone and developed. So you talked a little bit about your family, but also in you have actually created a CPD program on transgender inclusion in the workplace as and a bit of a training and insight. So do you want to talk us through a little bit about what inspired that to start with?
So my daughter came out as transgender a couple of years ago, and at the time she was in an all-boys school and starting year 12. So are you still there? So at the time, the school asked my husband and I to speak to all of the teaching staff and just explain to them what it meant, really, because they wanted all of the teaching staff to have a better understanding of the journey. And she was the first one in the school. So we went and did that. And then that kind of turned into me doing a bit of an Ida Hobbit presentation at the office. And then I think one of the younger architects in the office got behind me and loved that younger generation and their energy. She said, you should develop a CPD with that. So I actually spoke to the Institute and, you know, all the imposter syndrome comes in. I'm not an architect. I'm a straight white female. Who's going to want to hear this from me? But yeah, they did. And the last couple of years I've presented to a couple of the bigger firms like Hassell, Lyons, Architectus, and even Mission Australia asked me to present to their corporate team. I haven't done a very good job of, you know, selling myself this year, but it's still there. And really what I talk about is just being a great ally and how to be an awesome ally to the LGBT community. And while 75% of the time you're preaching to the converted, if I can say that I've captured one straight white male in that audience to understand a little bit better about the understanding of that community, I feel like I've done my job.
Yeah.
And I get some really big hugs after the presentation sometimes too.
Absolutely. And I think so. And I think it is incredible. At the end of the day, I understand the imposter syndrome and look, it would be fantastic, but sometimes it's really hard for people to be able to speak up or there to be not representation. So I think the power of allies to be able to help people within that story, but also that personal connection with that as well. And, I've obviously seen the program and we've gone through it. And I think it's a very lovely educating and understanding first, which I think is always the first step within anything. And then just appreciation. The rest of it is, you know, just being able to have a safe space that people can ask questions and do that. And I think sometimes if you are an ally versus somebody who identifies, it can be a lot easier for both of those things because it doesn't feel people
don't necessarily
feel like they're asking as many stupid questions and they might offend somebody in it.
Yeah.
Is that they can actually ask and be able to do that. So I think that's a lovely part of the program. And I do, you know, we'll obviously put your details at the end within the show notes if anybody does want to reach out to you to do that. So I think.
And it's really these now with all the Fair Work laws, it's everybody's business and every employer's business to be a great ally now, too. So while I wrote it in line with the architecture CPD requirements so that they can get their certificate and their one point at the end, it can be really of benefit to any business that wants to explore their diversity, equity, inclusion policies.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's fantastic. At the end of the day, it's one of those things that we just, I think it's education, understanding, and just raising awareness in those worlds. So let's talk about one of those things that interlinks this, but back into your office. And we've had this conversation before
about gender neutral toilets. So
yeah,
I know, I love it. So I walked into your studio and essentially your easiest solution is just a piece of paper that is stuck up near the door. And what does that piece of paper say?
It says, whatever, just wash your hands.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? So yeah. I know when we had Chris on the podcast, yeah. He was like, oh, God, no one talks about gender-neutral toilets. It seems to be a bigger deal than it really needs to be.
Yeah.
And I think where I've seen it done really well is, you know, that's why I loved you. It's just like, whatever. I guess we don't really care. Just wash your hands, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, it depends on what the setup for people is in their offices as well. But, you know, it's obviously been done and you can change signage around really well. So I think that's, I just found that one of those things walking in. So if anybody is ever thinking about those types of things, there's some really easy solutions out there. And don't think about, my advice would be don't overthink things. Just how do you make it not a deal?
Yeah.
Really? At the end of that's the day, right. Which I think you guys have done really well. So, I mean, as things continue to evolve and, you know, studios are all, or organisations are all at their own stages, right? As you said, you know, a fish rots from the head and different leaders are in that. What would be some of your advice for people out there who may not feel that they have as, you know, what am I going to say the right word here, sophisticated or open-minded leaders, and how do you think people can actually create an influence in their organisation?
Yeah, I thought about that a little bit. I suppose championing change is an important one, and recognizing where the gaps may lie, and protecting mental health. It's a really big one and can affect people in so many different ways. Mm. And, you know, I openly will speak about my own mental health, and sometimes it takes people to recognize that in themselves or to have had something happen in their lives that they can reflect on before they can recognize that. But, you know, generally in a HR sense, people can suck, but they can also be really great humans.
Yeah.
And if we can tap into the great human side, then we can get the best out of people and have them feeling that they're bringing themselves to work, they're being transparent, and they're being understood.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I think the first thing when we're talking about creating inclusive environments is that people can be heard sometimes. Having programs like yours is about, oh, okay, that's okay to have that conversation. You know, as I've mentioned previously, when I started my company, there it was the time when gay marriage was out there, and, you know, the company I was starting at, Grey Putson, put it up there that they were encouraging it, or, you know, supporting the referendum, and that just made a big difference, right? So sometimes it's about what you are putting out there. We're living in a world where, luckily, we don't live in the United States, where there's a lot of love and there's a lot of hate, and you're going to only continue to get fed that. But at the end of the day, a workplace is a place we all come together. We need, you know, we're human beings. You know, we're not machines. We're not AI. You can't just type in and that's it and it just happens. We need to work together as a team as well. And we're going to have people who are different in multiple ways, whether it's they've got a diverse background to us or identify differently to us. At the end of the day, sometimes they spell well, sometimes they've got a good, you know, design eye, sometimes they're great at communicating, sometimes they're not great at communicating.
Yeah.
We all have our strengths and our weaknesses, and really being able to play to those or understand how we get the best out of each person, but also how we align a team and how we actually do that as well. So it's all very well talking about all the fluffy stuff, but at the end of the day, you know, we are obviously looking for people who are a good fit within the team, a good human beings, and respect each other as well, and enable a team to come together and get the best out of each other as well.
Mm.
Now, I'm just going to take a slight flip back there for a little bit. So I know you obviously said you started back in the 90s, okay, which really isn't that long ago, but now I realise when I put my son's date of birthing, he was born in 2020 and I'm getting very old, very quickly. But tell us a little bit about what you've seen as a change within the industry over your lifetime.
Well, the first project that I ran as a project architect was in Dublin, and I would have to drive 3 hours to get to this site and spend the whole day there answering queries and, you know, being hammered with questions from consultants and different trades on site all day. And I remember the managing contractor down there used to very proudly say that he'd cleaned up a toilet for me before I arrived. And that meant taking down the titty posters and, you know, they'd all been warned not to wolf whistle and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So I'm really glad we've come a long way from that, you know, that you can expect that there'll be a female toilet and B, you won't see things like that up.
Not all the time, but yes, we're definitely getting better. I mean, it's one of those things. I think I've shared this story before. My partner started a construction company, been females there before, but there were no sanitary bins. There was, you know, the blokes asking when they got female apprentices or female trades on, oh, why are they off going off all the time? It's like, mate, come on. Yeah. But, you know, that is obviously the world and how we've evolved in that time. And where do you think then, looking forward, where do you see the next 20 years heading?
I think what I hope for, and I've had this conversation with a few people through the Building Pride Network as well, is that, you know, diversity and equity won't just mean equality for women, it'll just be equality for all. So, whether you're of a different racial background, or depending on what your home situations might be, all of that will just come into play and we'll just be better humans.
We are who we are and we accept that we are just individuals, nothing needing to be identified and those types of things as well. And look, I really wish I could say that I don't hear stories of people still going on site and females still going on site worrying about what they need to wear and what they're doing and sometimes being treated differently. And I think on our last podcast with Chris, he shared some fantastic things, which is essentially, you know, the culture you walk past is the culture that you accept. Yeah. And we really need to think about that leaders who are on site need to be leading by example and pulling people up and saying that's actually not okay. So I think it will continue to evolve as we go through the next
part. I think the sites aspect is still tough. And, I got some pronoun stickers printed up for our guys to put on their hard hats when they walk out onto site and things. So I know it can seem like a small thing, but that can mean all the difference for one person if they're struggling. So
absolutely. And just to identify and to be able to do that. So I think that's great. All right. So just to close out, we always ask somebody a bit about your favorite book, podcast, or resources that you think are inspiring or worth people checking out.
Okay. Well, if you ask Serious Carly, from a HR work perspective, I've found a lot of synergies in the Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins lately.
Yeah.
I listen to the audiobook and then I end up buying the hard copy book because I want to reflect back to things. Last year, I was doing a big martial arts grading and my obsession last year was can't hurt me. And so there was a lot of analogies about who would go down the foxhole with me and different things like that. And then if you go to Fun Carly, I really enjoy like watching Drag Race. That's a good way to just turn off your brain.
I love it.
Soak in some people differences.
It's on Stan if you don't know what we're talking about. I just love how creative they are. But my partner, I got into it during COVID and my partner's like, no, you can't watch
that. So good. You can't feel bad at the end of one of those shows. And then from a podcaster, I really enjoy listening to Em Rossiano. She came out with a podcast through COVID and she's neurodiverse and she champions a lot of great things. She's not everybody's cup of tea from a comedic point of view, but I really like listening to her and some of the things she sheds light on.
No, that's good. Thank you for sharing those. I am obviously quite well versed in Mel's podcasts and things like that. Yeah. So I have had the book on the list, so I will definitely give it a bit of a add it to my audiobook list and I go through a few a week. So that sounds like it's a nice way to wake up in the morning to listen to her and a bit of inspiration. Excellent. Thank you, Carly, so much for all of your time and giving us all of those insights. And look, if anybody is interested in the CPT program that Carly has, please reach out to her on LinkedIn. We'll include her details in the show notes, and definitely is, we'll even see if we can do some things on that too with you. But I think it's been a fantastic insight. Guymer Bailey obviously is a delightful place to work. You're doing some fantastic things there. If there's any studios or anybody wants to reach out to figure out, you know, how have they done it and why, how is it working? Please reach out at any time, and I know Carly would be happy to share. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your day. See ya. What a great chat we had with Carly. What a fantastic and inspiring person. It was great to hear a bit about her background, how she got into the role that she's been doing, and also what fantastic things that they've been doing at Guymer Bailey and her CPD program. If you're keen to reach out to Carly, please check our show notes. Her LinkedIn will be included, and also the notes into her great podcasts and suggestions. If you'd like to be interviewed or would be interested in being able to share your story as well, please get in touch with us. If you enjoy the show, please follow and listen along to the next one. Thanks.